And welcome into the Doug Russell Podcast. Glad to have you along. It is the weekend edition of the show. We've got opening day less than a month away. We haven't had a chance to talk a lot of baseball so far on the show. When we began the podcast, it was right at the end of the Brewers season. It was right at the end of September. So the Brewers were making their final push, if you will, for the playoffs. They wound up, of course, getting to the postseason and wound up, you know, getting swept by the Dodgers in the first round. But it was important for the Brewers just to get there, even though they had a losing record. There were two teams in Major League Baseball last year that had losing records that got to the postseason. It was the Brewers in the National League and the Astros in the American League. And here's the difference between the two, but it also illustrates how important it is just to make it, as Mike Holmgren used to say, just make it to the tournament. Just get into the playoffs and anything can happen. The Astros came within spitting distance of the World Series, even though they had the same record that the Brewers did, 29-31, at the end of last season. But there were so many things that were anomalies during the 2020 baseball season. Obviously, there were so many things that were anomalies in life for all of us in the year 2020. You know, the pandemic wiped out so many things. It wiped out graduations. My niece graduated from high school, but didn't get to actually go through the ceremony until August. And then it was mostly virtual. I think only her parents, I don't even think my parents, her grandparents, I don't even think they were allowed in the ceremony. And that, again, it wasn't until August because of the pandemic. It canceled most of the baseball season. There weren't fans in the stands at most football games, both at Camp Randall Stadium and Lambeau Field until the playoffs. But that happened all around the United States and, you know, as far as worldwide sporting competitions as well. I mean, it's weird to see these soccer stadiums in England in the EPL that were completely empty. It was just a weird, weird year. And it was also a weird year for one of the best players in all of Major League Baseball in Christian Yelich. And for Christian Yelich, last season was a disaster. Any way you look at it. And earlier this week, Christian Yelich was asked about his season. And I look, Adam McAlvey is a friend of mine. I think he's a great, great writer. And I know what he was trying to do when he asked Christian Yelich the question that he asked him. But I just thought that the response probably was the smart ass response that the question, the way that it was asked, probably deserved. And again, this is not a knock on Adam. I'm not sure how I would have rephrased it, but Adam got the answer that he wanted to, but it wasn't until after he got this response.
Christian, with some time now to sort of have digested all the craziness of last year, what did you think of your 2020 season performance-wise?
I thought it went pretty good. How about you?
Okay. Adam probably deserved that. But that, like, again, not a knock on Adam. I think Adam's a great writer. By the way, if you haven't had a chance to check out his article about Bob Uecker, just a tremendous, tremendous article at Brewers.com and link to that. And he recounts the final phone call that he had with Hall of Famer Phil Niekro over the offseason. And it'll just rip your heart apart. It was a bad offseason for Uke. He lost a couple of really, really good friends, Hall of Fame friends, Phil Niekro, obviously Hank Aaron, guys that he's known for decades upon decades. So I would definitely encourage you to go read Adam's article that he wrote about Bob Uecker. But again, I understand what Adam was getting at when he asked Christian Yelich that question. Somebody had to ask the question. That wasn't the first question of Christian Yelich's media availability. There was some pussyfooting around about, you know, how was your offseason? What did you do? Did you lift weights and all this other stuff? But Adam finally got to it, so I will give him credit for that. But after the snarky response, he didn't pull any punches.
No, I thought it was pretty much all around terrible. I don't know. It just wasn't good. But hey, it is what it is, man. It's baseball. That stuff happens. Can't change it now. Can't do anything about it. You know, I tell you guys every year that good or bad, the previous year doesn't really mean anything. You can't do anything about it. So whether you were an MVP the previous year, you sucked. You know, everybody starts at zero. in spring training in a new year. And, you know, we live in a business where it's a, what have you done for me lately? And, you know, what I've done lately is play terribly. So, you know, looking forward to a fresh start and getting, you know, start on a new year.
Hey, Christian, you also said that last year was a weird year, of course. You said that a bunch of times last year. I'm just kind of curious, like, if there was anything that maybe you could kind of take away that you learned from that season that you can apply toward this year, even though it was a weird year with maybe singular sort of variables that may not or may exist in the season.
I mean, I think this year is going to be similar but different. Going forward, you know, we're going to have the possibility of having fans, just being used to protocols. Hopefully a light at the end of the tunnel for all this stuff. I think last year it was just, you know, you didn't really know how long all this was going to go on, what was happening, pretty much in the middle of the pandemic. So I don't know if there's too much that applies to this year from last year other than that you've just been through these experiences. And it's not as much of a shock. You know, last year, whatever routine you had kind of got thrown out the window. It's like, you know, too bad. This is how it is this year. Now you kind of come into the new year with a better understanding what's ahead of you and how to deal with it. So, you know, like I said earlier, I think it was to Adam, where it's like, hey, you know, it's a fresh start. It's a new year. It's just hard to really base anything off of prior years in any season.
Steve, go ahead.
Just having at least partial access to video, but at least with the iPad stuff, how much of a difference can that make for you, do you think? Or how much of a factor was that last year?
That's not going to change anything for me. I'm not a big in-game video guy. I just don't like it. I feel like whatever swing you have that day is the swing you have. I don't love trying to make too many in-game adjustments or watch all my swings or do all that stuff after at bats because, like, hey, it's not the time to change it, in my opinion. So I'm more of a pre-game video guy. Like, I'll watch the previous night's at bats or something like that. But as far as in-game, never really been my thing. So it wasn't a factor for me last year. That was fine for me. So, yeah.
Christian, from a team standpoint, how do you guys look at last season overall? You got to where you wanted to go, which is the playoff, but you probably didn't get there the way that you wanted. What's the mood now as you kind of build on that going into this year?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we should discredit the fact that we made the playoffs last year just because of how tough of a year that really was. And to be able to do that as a group, like, yeah, we didn't come steamrolling into the playoffs by any means, but we got there. And a lot of teams didn't get there. So I think that's something that, A, you should be proud of, and especially in a year like that. And I definitely think there's room for improvement. I think everybody who was here last year can acknowledge the fact that we didn't play our best as a team. It wasn't the best showing all around. And I think we're going to be better this year. And, you know, looking forward to hopefully an entire season, a regular camp, and just playing that 162 out and going from there. But like I said, definitely don't ever want to discredit when you make the playoffs with all the outstanding circumstances from last year. You know, still a great accomplishment for the group.
A portion of Christian Yelich's media availability earlier this week. And, you know, when you look at his season last year, Christian Yelich, I mean, he's a great player. But last year sucked in every way, shape, and form, with the exception of home runs. He was able to hit 12 home runs, which was okay, but he only drove in 22 runs. Now, granted, the sample size was obviously a lot smaller. 200 at-bats, he played in 58 of the Brewers' 60 regular season games, so only sat out two games last year for the Crew. But he only hit .205. His on-base percentage was .356, which isn't terrible, but he was also up there flailing. He struck out 76 times. That's not Christian Yelich. That's not somebody who, in the previous two seasons, was the National League batting champion. He was just up there flailing, looked lost. When he did connect, hey, he can hit a ball as far as anybody. But he's going to be, I think, the key to the Brewers' resurgence this season in 2021 if they're able to do anything. Now, the Brewers and David Stearns and Matt Arnold I think they've been smart when it comes to acquiring players. They're not going to go out and they're not going to break the bank. They're not going to go out and get the big name free agents. That's just not going to happen. But they were able to bring in another Gold Glove outfielder in Jackie Bradley Jr. This is somebody who's hit almost 100 home runs over the last six seasons. This is someone who gives the Brewers outfield depth. But again, it's going to go back to whether or not this team can hit, because last year they didn't hit at all. Nobody hit on this team. The only guys that hit, they're not around anymore. Daniel Vogelbach, in limited action, only played in 19 games. You would have thought with the cult following that he had been with the Brewers for a couple of seasons. No, he had 58 at-bats. Granted, he hit 328. Granted, he hit four home runs. Granted, he was a big fat guy that I think everybody just kind of liked. You know, everybody loves a fat athlete, and especially one that rakes. And Vogelbach, when he got to Milwaukee, he raked. But nobody else hit. I mean, Ryan Braun's not there anymore. It's all but certain that, you know, his playing days are over. But Ryan Braun only hit 233. That probably was one of the things that pushed him more toward retirement as much as anything. Keston Hiura, he played in almost 59 of the Brewers' 60 games. He hit 212 last season. Can't have that happen. Avisail Garcia, a former All-Star, played in 53 games, 181 at-bats. He was an everyday player. Played a decent center field, but he only hit 238 for Avisail Garcia with two home runs. 15 runs batted in. Can't have that. Omar Narvaez, completely lost last year. 108 at-bats. Played in 40 games. Your starting catcher, right? Two home runs. 10 runs batted in. Hit .176. You can't have that. The Brewers pitching staff should be okay. But man, their hitters have got to do something this year. Now, randomly, I was wandering the halls of 97.3 The Game in Milwaukee. You can hear me do afternoon sports reports on the Drew and KB show as well as on the crossover. And you can hear me at the end of 9 to noon doing the sports updates. I also fill in here and there. But that's, I guess, my day job, if you will, doing the sports updates, not only in Milwaukee, but also on Fox Sports 1070 in Madison as well. But I ran into former Brewers right-hander Paul Wagner. And Wags is a longtime friend, pitched a couple of years for the Brewers, spent most of his career with the Pittsburgh Pirates. But he's a long, longtime friend and just one of the best guys you're ever going to come across. And he's got a new show on Saturday mornings on 97.3, The Game, along with Ritter from down the hall at FM 106, who does the morning show. Ritter, Scott, and Shannon over there. And they have an outdoor show. And that's kind of what they had a meeting for. They were taping some elements of their show that's going to air on Saturday morning on 97.3, The Game. And I love Wags because he said, "How come I haven't been on your podcast yet?" And I said, "Well, do you want to go into a studio and tape something?" He's like, "Yeah, let's do it." So that's what I did. I got to sit down with a longtime friend of mine, former major leaguer, former Pittsburgh Pirate, former Cleveland Indian, and yes, former Milwaukee Brewers right-hander and the pride of Germantown, Paul Wagner. Have I buttered you up enough, Paul Wagner?
Yes, you have. I was wandering aimlessly around here. When I get lost, I always feel like I should have brought breadcrumbs just so I know exactly which way I'm going. And then you drop, "I'm in the back here, Studio 4, and I've never been back to those drums."
Yeah, there's a lot. In this building where we record this, the iHeartRadio Milwaukee complex, there's six radio stations. And I think there's probably at least 10 or 12 just recording rooms that are just in the back catacombs that nobody bothers me back there. It's the production guy, it's me, and it's Belling, and that's it. Those are the only people that go back there.
Yeah, I could tell by there must be a dimmer switch or else the utility bills aren't paid, because it seemed like every other light was lit up and every other light was off.
Yeah, that's the way it kind of has got around here. But you and I go back a ways because, you know, we kind of joked, and I've joked about it a number of times. You've been around the block a few times because, as you can relate to, I've been fired a few times, and this is kind of where we all wound up. This is where I wound up, and this is where you're doing some stuff for the station that I'm heard mostly on now, Milwaukee 97.3 The Game.
No, absolutely. Our relationship has started from day one. when I came from Pittsburgh. Again, we talk about getting fired. Everybody says, you played for so many teams. You must have been great, you know, a big free agent. You must have chasing the big almighty dollar. I go, no, when you get fired, you look for the next sucker that's going to take you in. and then they realize that the gig is up, and they're like, what the hell did we sign this guy for? And you move on. But no, we've done lots of things together. I always appreciate it. I've always seen you at Brewers on Deck.
Yep.
Whenever we bump into each other, it's always good conversation. And one day here is nice. And I look forward to maybe making this a special. I'll be in here on Thursdays generally.
Okay.
And then I can always pop in if there's a quick something happens. Obviously, Milwaukee Brewers. But again, being a Wisconsin guy, being from Germantown, enjoying Wisconsin sports, Packers, Bucks, Badgers, outdoors. We're doing that outdoors show. So everything involved with Wisconsin, I'm always here. And if I can ever pop in and give you some information that might not be too good, you can have it.
I love it. That's fine. That's what we want to have here on the show, kind of a free-flowing conversation. And as I told you before we started recording, the most listened to show that we've done is the Tommy Lasorda Uncensored Rant, where it was just one F-bomb after another, after another, after another. So that's kind of the attitude of the show that we like to have.
I will get comfortable. We will move in, and then the Jim Leland stories will come, because I'm always censored with the 7-second cough button whenever everybody's worried about me talking about Jim Leland, that the F-bombs are going to come. So yes, as I move in and feel more comfortable, they will definitely come out as we talk.
I look forward to that, because I remember the first time I'm trying to remember exactly the first time we met. I mean, I know that it was when I was over at WSSB, and you were doing some stuff for us, and you'd been to the golf outing a couple of times, and you and I had been at golf outings before and had golfed together a couple of times. And I just remember warning you. It's like, you know, you can't drop the F-bombs here live on the radio, but you can hear, so we're good to go if you need to. But
I think maybe, Dougie, wasn't it when – were you at the old SSP when it was behind Walmart in Waukesha?
No, I wasn't that. That was actually ESPN. That's what has, you know, people have asked me. I need to ask you about your former station, and then I have to gently ask them, which one are you referring to? No, I was not at that station, but that eventually turned into ESPN Milwaukee after Craig Karmazin bought them, moved them to a couple of different locations downtown. I've been to that building, so I'm familiar with it. It's not there anymore, but I'm familiar with it, but I never worked in that building.
That is where I started
with
Loppy and Bill Johnson, and we were, yes, I thought something drastic could happen on the negative side if I went behind there and I saw the building. I was like, uh-oh, are they filming a, what are we doing, Clarice or something?
Yeah. It's not even a Walmart anymore.
No, it's Action Motorsports.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it is. So, again, we do a lot with them, or I have everything from oils, lubricants for my jet skis and my four-wheelers. But, again, not to give them a plug, but it's a pretty nice facility. They took over that large old Walmart, and at least it didn't have to come down, and it's being used.
Well, you're doing the outdoor show now with Ritter, who is part of the morning show over on FM 106. Tell us about that show, because I know it airs on 97.3 The Game before what is going to be now this week, starting on Saturday, being Garbedian on Golf.
Yeah, so it's really good. It's an outdoors it's called Tailgate Talk. And we put it together. This has been in the works now for about a year since we've been kind of kicking this around. We don't necessarily want it just to be about hunting and fishing. We want it to be about outdoorsmanship, you know, boating, jet skiing, hiking in the national or in the state parks, seeing how conservation has taken place. And right now to the forefront is wolf season and bear season and deer season and turkey. So Wisconsin outdoorsman is definitely driven by hunting and fishing, and we've known that for many, many years. But it's also bringing to the forefront how snowmobile trails, where the groomers are being, how landowners are being compensated for ATV trails that are now opened up throughout the state, how the farmers are being compensated for you know, destruction by wolves. And it's kind of like a blanket outdoorsmanship sportsman, and it's hopefully going to take off. We do like it. But, yeah, it covers pretty much everything outside of an enclosed building.
Being outside is so much fun, and I think that we've really rediscovered it in the last year because we've been so cooped up inside with all this COVID nonsense. My wife and I started hiking in the last year, whether it's through the Kettle Moraine State Forest. We did some hiking. We went out to Arizona a couple of weeks ago and, you know, hiked through Sedona and did some hikes in the Grand Canyon as well. Getting outside is just, it's so important for people.
Right. It is. And, you know, we stress the conservation and we stress cleaning. You know, some of the pet peeves that we've just talked about are people that are not taking care of it. And I'm not saying whether you harvest an animal or you do things, but the common courtesies of walking down an ice age trail and throwing a Go-Gurt on the ground or a Cheetos bag that's empty. You know, it's sad to see that, and it's hard to believe that people actually do that, because you know, you can have your opinions about everything, but it's just take a bag with you and clean up. But the numbers are staggering, like you said, you and your wife now. Granted, you don't necessarily pay for a pass, but the numbers that are coming in because of COVID, licenses are up, state parks, biking. I mean, there's so much money now, and it is giving over to these conservation groups as far as Pheasants Forever, Whitetails, outdoors, the Washington County Parks, the Waukesha County Parks, the waterways and the runways are all being, there's money now because of COVID. People are doing things like that.
And I'll give a plug for what I think the best deal in the country is right now, $80 a year for a national park pass. And that gets you through all the national parks, national monuments. We get our national park pass every year. And, you know, we're trying to get to Yellowstone this year, but we've been to Zion and Bryce Canyon over the last couple of years. We're going to get out to Death Valley. We did Grand Canyon, Saguaro National Park.
Awesome.
National parks have become, I think, in the last year, something that we've rediscovered as a country. And it's we went out to Badlands National Park last year, Wind Cave National Park in South Dakota last year. And it's just fun to see, you know, what this country has to offer when you get out of the bubble that you're in.
Correct. We just have been, we're kicking around the idea of doing Deadwood, Mount Rushmore, up in that area. And I've, you know, a 13-hour ride out there with a couple people and stuff like
that, awesome.
Bringing the kids and just enjoying it, because you read about it and you can see it. But you know what? Depending on what's happening here, it's a crazy time in this world. And you know what? To go outside and be outside and see some things like that, just get outside your bubble, as you say.
Which will dovetail nicely into the fact that the Brewers finally announced that they're going to have some fans at American Family Field. That's still taking some getting used to the saying. But look, as someone who pitched for as long as you did in the major leagues, how difficult do you think it would have been last year to pitch in this cathedral of a ballpark, any of the cathedrals in Major League Baseball, without any fans in the stands?
It's crazy. So the announcement of 25%, I think they said 25% capacity today. You know what? It's tough. You know, you do your spring training games, and there were some things, or backfield games, and there's no fans. Let's get to the point. You know, fans, loud, cheering, booing, it draws adrenaline. It's your competitive spirit that comes out when you're performing for somebody,
mm-hmm.
regardless if it's baseball, football, basketball, whether you're singing, whether you're whatever. You want to appeal to your crowd and to your base. And when you get a reaction from them, whether positive or negative, you feed off that. You need that. We always talk about how closers, and I'm going back for the baseball scenario, a closer who pitches in a one-run game for the save seems to dominate. The pitcher or the closer that goes into that ninth inning down by four because he needs work ends up giving up three runs. Your body, we're human. You run on adrenaline, and you need that. So pitching in front of nobody, a couple cardboard cutouts, man, that would have been tough.
You pitched in the minor leagues, though. I mean, in the lower end of the minor leagues, I would imagine that some of those games were probably fairly silent. Can any of those guys draw on any of that? Or is it just so different once you get to the bigs?
It's different because regardless of – I pitched in Pittsburgh for some of the lean years. You know what? You still had 8,000 people.
Sure.
I mean, you still had somebody there. In the minor leagues, you still go to a small town and you still have 1,700 fans there. You still smell people cooking out in the tailgate. You know, you still smell the brats and the beer spill on the floor. It's a baseball atmosphere. And you thrive on that regardless, but when it's dead silent and you're having to put in background music of guys playing an organ or fake fans, you know, it's got to be tough. It had to be tough on those guys.
Did you go to any games last year at all at what was then Miller Park? When was the last time you were at a ballpark?
Because before, not COVID, 2019.
Yeah, me too.
Yep, 2019. I did it a couple. I filled in for with one of the TV stations here, and Timmy Van Voren and those guys, and you know, I did some things with them, but since then I haven't. Going to the ballpark in 19 was good. We do a lot of the fantasy camps. We still do Coors, Miller Lite, U.S. Cellular, Pepsi Cola. So there's a lot of camps with at the park, and then with Hellfair Field. But since COVID came in, I was down in spring training in March. I was set to work with the Pittsburgh Pirates. I was down in Tampa.
Okay.
So we're in the St. Pete area, and I was going to go over to Bradenton, Sarasota, Pirates, Braves. There was a couple, three games I was going to see, do some things. We're going to throw out a baseball. We're going to, you know, reminisce about old times and shake hands with the fans and stuff like that. And right before that came up, it got canceled. They shut down spring training. And then right before St. Patrick's Day, I shot back home.
How trippy is that for you to go back and you know, spend some time with your old teammates from either the, you know, Pirates or the Indians or the Brewers or anybody like that?
It's kind of nice because you never have, you know, you never really have true friends. And maybe that's a harsh word. Maybe you don't have friends that you see all the time, but you have acquaintances. And when you get together and you run into somebody who's been there, the players now, I don't know many of the players, but the coaches, the coaching staffs, obviously guys up there in the booth, Pittsburgh being my longest tenured place, knowing the guys up there, John Wehner, Bob Walk, Greg Brown, who came from the Buffalo Bisons, who I met in the AAA when I was in the minor leagues, and then going to other places. Baseball is a funny game. You don't think you know people, but as you walk those circles, you end up bumping into people. And I can still remember me and Craig Counsell working out prior to spring trainings together because the guys that were more important, they had the facility. I remember going across to the golf course, me and Craig Counsell playing catch, long toss, just because we needed somewhere to go. But it's funny how the circle seems small, but you always know somebody.
There's been a lot of players, whether it's Gavin Lux or now Jared Kelnick, that have come out of this area, whereas, you know, you mentioned you and Craig Counsell. That seemed like it was pretty much it for a little while as far as southeastern Wisconsin players. And it's just, I think it's great to see some of these younger players coming through the system. I think Kelnick could be a star.
Yeah. Yeah, and bringing up old players, you know, nothing against the Jared Washburns. We've got Jordan Zimmerman there, yep. The guys from the – but down here in this area – I played with a guy from Nicolet, Lance Painter.
Sure.
Yeah, so down in our corner, it's pretty tough, but Wisconsin has had some success. Like I said, Washburn up there in the Northwest. I mean,
I went to college with him.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, they won the College World Series when I was at Oshkosh.
Yeah.
And, you know, a couple of years later, there's Jared Washburn pitching in the World Series. It's
yes.
Crazy.
And we wish he could have put a Brewer uniform on. But, you know, you got so many guys like with Wicky and Zimmerman now and guys that I'm missing. I apologize. But the young kids coming through our facility, the Gavin Lux, who I seen, you know, against Heartland Arrowhead. We had a kid, a nice dominating pitcher at Heartland named Nate Brown, who went down to the University of Florida, won a national championship as a freshman down there. Kelnick's swinging the bat all the time. He just left recently for spring training. And
hit a home run the other day.
Yes, he did. And his manager is Scott Service.
Yep.
So now Scotty, and you know what? All the drama that's coming up, it's a whole different topic for a whole different day, but it's kind of...
With the service time?
Yep. Yeah. It's gonna hit with the CBA expiring this year and things coming in when you actually have a president or a CEO saying that they are, yeah, it's not going to be good. I think it's going
to
be...
Well, he had to walk the plank for some of that nonsense.
Yeah.
And he should have.
Yeah, he should have. But it's something that was said that we all knew.
Yeah.
You don't think Chris Bryant knows? It started back in the early with the White Sox when Black Jack McDowell got screwed.
Yeah.
We all know it. And you know, when this happened to Jared, the phone calls that he received before he left for spring training were huge. Huge. I mean, he was getting, and I don't want to say names, but he was getting calls from big people that know what was happening, and we just needed that balloon to burst so that you could come into when someone says they're controlling service time to not pay you. They're concerned about Latin players being loud or bringing in Asian players and you have to pay an interpreter or overpaid players on your team in Seager. You know what? You just opened up a huge can of worms that the players union is just going to exploit to hell.
How nasty do you think the negotiations are going to be this coming off season between the players and the owners?
I think with this gasoline poured on it, it's going to be huge. His quotes, his 7-minute or his 47-minute talk with the Rotary Club in Seattle is going to actually do so much damage to the owners. In past bargaining agreements, Tony Clark and the union, we've kind of given. You know, you see how there's billions of dollars coming into this industry. And again, it's hard to tell us as common people what a million or a billion dollars. And you see minimum wage, $563,000 for 6 months of work. You're like, oh, I'd do that. And it's true. You know, it is. You know, I don't lose the Wisconsin Midwest perspective. But when you get out of our bubble and you jump into their bubble, That's where you see it, and the monies can't be hidden. The new contracts that are coming up with the MLB Network, with SiriusXM, with ESPN, expanded playoffs, the money's going to come in, and I think it's going to get ugly. Not going to go as far as predicting a strike or a lockout or a work stoppage. But put it this way, I wouldn't be surprised if something did take place.
How much distrust is there between Tony Clark and Rob Manfred, in your opinion?
On a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah.
10. I do not believe. I go back to when we were talking about COVID last year at this time. Mm-hmm. Major League Baseball comes up with remember when they came up with a 145-page way to combat COVID and what we can do? Mm-hmm. And then they presented it to the Players Union. You know what? If me and you have a disagreement and me and you have to agree eventually, I think me and you need to be at the table together. I hated the fact that ownership and management never included Tony or even a representative from the union saying, no, no, no. It was always, here's what we propose. Even this year in spring training, we proposed a 30-day delay. The union says no. The union is not concerned about COVID. It's always spinning it so one person or one group is against the other group. And I don't believe Tony Clark would come out and say this. In my opinion, I wouldn't trust Manfred and ownership as far as you can kick them.
It seems as though that this distrust between the two is and could be really perilous for baseball. It seemed at least as though, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're closer to it than I am, but when Michael Wiener, who passed away at brain cancer, but he was the Players Association head in between Donald Fehr and Tony Clark, it seemed as though he was able to forge better relationships with management. Is that my perception or is that true?
I would say that's a fair assessment. Absolutely. I think it's whether you prey on the weak or you maximize a loss or you never let a tragedy go. I think they pressed. I think the Players Union had given up a little bit. If you were at the 50-yard line, you know, we're both at the 50-yard line. I think since that time, that little time span or whatever that slot is, it's almost like ownership moved to year 40. Mm-hmm. And you know what? We got to get back to the 50. And I think that's where the Players Union. So not knowing what our next steps were, how we were going to do it, this whole thing in Seattle has just blown it up and now it has given fuel to Tony Clark, the union, to say this is what we need, A, B, C, and D, and we're not going to give.
As a former player, and I know it's been a few years since you were in the Players Association itself, but from a player's perspective, what are those A, B, C, and D things that the players want that the owners won't give them? What could potentially hold this up from a player's perspective, in other words?
The biggest thing is what we've been talking about is the player needs more flex. The program is set up where you got 3 years of team control, 3 years of arbitration under that same team, and then your year of free agency. And it's hard because if I'm an electrician and I want to go to Ace Electric and Beta Electric calls me and says, hey, I'll jump you to $45 an hour, I'm leaving. And I'm not saying that baseball needs to be in that situation, but that timeline is very extraordinary because the average Major League Baseball player plays, what, 2.3 years?
Sure.
And if you got team control for six, it's a hard pill to swallow as a player who's trying to establish himself or put financial futures, you know, in the back of his pocket. And for $563,000, which is a lot of money, that team can pay you for the next 3 years, mm-hmm. and you could be done.
The flip side, of course, though, is then how do the smaller market teams like the Brewers or the Royals or, I don't know, the Indians, just throwing a couple, the Pirates, one of your former teams, how do they survive against teams like the Dodgers or the Red Sox or the Cubs? I know the Cubs have cut salary this year, but they certainly could afford to grow salary. The Yankees, obviously, the Mets, the big market teams that can afford to go out and spend $200, $220 million every year on payroll.
Well, that's a good point. But that's where we're not trying to go from 3-3 to free agency, maybe a 2-2 free agency. You got to evaluate players better. If you can't determine, I can watch you. Well, I played pretty long. I don't know. Somebody must have been drinking when they were watching me play. Shit. I don't know why the hell I keep getting contracts. But, you know, if you can't evaluate talent within 3 years under your roof, mm-hmm. you got some issues. And I know that it's a lot deeper than that. A high school player, you know, he has to develop. So if you're going to draft a high school player, you know, maybe you get that extra year for him, or the college developmental program where if you come out of a junior college or age 21, I think they have to find a common ground where you can start the clock. But you can't hide guys for 6 years under team control. The players don't want that. We don't want that. This isn't like Jim Gantner, Paul Molitor, and Robin Yount, where they're going to wear Milwaukee Brewery uniforms for 17 years. It's just not that way. There's no love. I mean, there's no love. And you can always blame the players. But look at the other side. There's no love on management side. Mm-hmm. Easy. You know what? We loved Eric Thames. I just use him as an example. I love the guy. Great guy. Mm-hmm. We brought him in on a 3-year deal out of Korea. It was great. Eric's, boom, you're gone.
Yeah, 3 years, you're 15, gone. And he's out.
You're gone. Yeah, exactly. 3 years, 15. And then he goes and signs with the Washington Nationals last year for $2.5 million or $3 million. Mm-hmm. And you're like, man, wow. Mike Moustakas, granted, he's a high price free agent. But how many times did Mike Moustakas come to the Milwaukee Brewers on a 1-year deal? How many times did you see him buddy-buddy with Ryan Braun, Christian Yelich, and Mike Moustakas out in California stopping rapid fires? Mm-hmm. California Strong, we're doing this. Mark Antanasio's son, we're all buddies. We're all buddies. And boom, you're gone. You're gone. So both sides. There's no love lost between ownership and play. It's a business. And if it's going to be a business, then don't tie me down with this big weight.
All right, before I let you get out of here, thoughts on the Brewers season coming up. They're in spring training right now, just signed Jackie Bradley Jr. They've got now four really good – I mean, this is a stacked outfield, at least as far as the defense now, with Bradley in there. Lokane is back. Yelich won a gold glove a few years ago. I mean, Avisail Garcia, I thought, did really well in center field last year, better than I thought that he would do. Defensively, they bring in Colton Wong this year. So up the middle, I think their defense is going to be good. Can they hit enough, though?
Now, I think that's the approach. We saw last year how, you know, they tried to replace a $10 million player with 10 $1 million players. You know,
it doesn't always work.
So I think the Brewers' strengths obviously are going to be with our pitching staff. You know, you got Woodruff, Burns. You've got Hauser going to hopefully come back to what he did in the first 30 days. You got Brett Anderson coming back with his sinker ball. We'll figure out that fifth spot. You got Devin Williams. You got Josh Hader. You got Black, who's legit, who's out of options, so he'll be on the team. You got Suter, Peralta, Lindblom. I think our pitching staff is good. You add a gold glove second baseman. You're strong up the middle with Lokane. You put JBJ. My point to your question is, hey, if we can only score four runs, we're going to let them only score three. Because if they're scoring seven, we can't score eight.
Christian Yelich has to have a bounce-back season.
Absolutely. That's the whole basis of the success of the Milwaukee Brewers. It's a success of most teams. You thrive on it, and it's a pressure, it's a shoulder burden that the superstar, the big paid player, puts on him. People thrive around him. People perform better. When Christian Yelich performs at the level that we know he's capable, MVP style, players around him play better. When he performs at a .205 batting average, somebody else tries to do more than they're capable. All of a sudden, we just exposed Keston Hira last year. He hits 18 home runs, but his hit-to-contact ratio, his ball, he was striking out more than he's ever done in his life. So guys try to pick up the slack. It's easy to fall behind a leader than it is to try to overtake that leader. Yes, it all bears on Christian Yelich. He comes back to his MVP caliber. You'd be surprised how people stay healthy and they start to produce.
Ryan Braun hasn't announced it yet, but it looks as though his career is over. As someone who had to end his major league career yourself, what is he going to find when the season begins for just kind of living through life without the thing that he's known his entire life?
Yeah. Depending on his family situation, he's got three children. Obviously, he's had a great career here in Milwaukee. I really wanted Major League Baseball, so to go back to your topic about what's on the table. Yeah, obviously service time isn't, but that universal DH, it gives players, and it also gives the organization that one extra year. It's weird. You don't really think about this, but Albert Pujols in Anaheim, end of his career. Mm-hmm. If you have the universal DH, now that gives him the option of maybe coming back to the National League. Maybe he could retire as a St. Louis Cardinal. We know what he all did in St. Louis, but you could come back as a 26th man, maybe as a DH. Ryan Braun is going to miss it a little bit, but it's not going to hit him until that certain time and you can't predict it. You're going to miss it. You will. It's been your life for so long. You will eventually miss it. But I tell you what, if I – I think it'd be a lot easier with Ryan Braun's bank account than Paul Wagner's bank account.
That's fair. That's fair. You still did make it to the major league. I mean, I know that, you know, when Wicket and I used to have you on the old show, Wicket would give you shit left and right about your career. I genuinely respect. Look, I know that you weren't an all-star. You're not going to the Hall of Fame or anything like that unless you buy a ticket. But shit, man, you got to the major leagues. You stayed in the major leagues for a long time, and that should be respected.
No, I do. I appreciate that, and I laugh. And it's I got there. Yeah, I didn't perform the way I wanted to, but I know the struggles. I know how hard it is. I've seen so many players that had more talent than me, more this, more that, and they just don't get there. You know, it is a hard one. It's a hard ladder to climb. And, you know, you get beat down, you get beat up. It's a tough one. But, once you get there, it's pretty nice because you can actually look back and say, yeah, I'm not in the Hall of Fame. You know, I struck out Tony Gwynn. Hell,
there you
Tony
go.
Gwynn. I mean, he struck out three times against the greatest pitchers in the game. You know what? There's things that you can take from it, and I always figured it out that if I did 10 things and I did 9 things wrong, which I really did, I'm gonna thrive on that one thing I did right.
You struck out Tony Gwynn.
Struck out Tony Gwynn. Oh, shoot. Yeah.
Paul, this was fun. I didn't have any notes in front of me. I just saw you in the hallway and wanted to have you on the show just because it's been so long since you and I have done anything, yeah, you know, in front of microphones or anything. It's been fun. It's been great seeing you here today. And now that I know that you're here every Thursday, I might corny every once in a while.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And once the season starts, maybe depending on what you're all talking about, and if a topic comes up, yeah, grab me and then we can talk about how good the Brewers are doing or how bad they're doing.
hopefully they'll do okay. 3 years in a row, though, to the playoffs. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that is. I mean, it's never been done before.
Never been done before.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of like the acquisitions that the St. Louis Cardinals made. The Cubs always scare me. It depends. I know they're cutting salary. They lose people. But, hell, if we can get Craig can get four straight years, that'll be an accomplishment.
Definitely. And then also on the game, 97.3, you and Ritter, the outdoor show, that's at 6 or at 7?
At 7 a.m. on Saturday mornings. Yep, absolutely.
Always enjoy getting a chance to sit down with my longtime pal, Paul Wagner. And yeah, we've had some good times. And at some point, when he gets a little bit more comfortable in front of a microphone, that's when the stories really can start to fly. And I'm really looking forward to that. Hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I had conducting it. And again, I didn't have any notes in front of me. I just sometimes you have those guys that you just can sit down and have a conversation with for a half an hour. And Paul Wagner is definitely one of them, and we appreciate his willingness to come on the show at literally a moment's notice, wanting to come on the show at a moment's notice when we tape this on Thursday. All right, that'll do it for the weekend edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.